Okay, we're back. We're smiling. Andy's smiling even more because it's down to me for the final furlong, or whatever you want to call it. But he has an important message with some valuable knowledge to impart.
Just as a sort of a gotcha, if you download this code, which we're still working to zip up and get to you, the push notifications demo that failed, it was because of the path names were getting too long, because I put it down in a folder that had a too long a route. So just a warning with that, because Azure projects, it's got an Azure service in it. There's so many deep directory structures inside it that by the time you add it all up, it's kind of hitting a path too long thing. So just make sure that when you get the code, you zip it in a folder that's down near the root of your drive.
Yeah, put it on drive C in a folder called Jumpstart, and that should be fine. I mean, the issue is that there's a limitation with some file systems on some drives on the PC, that you can't have a path longer than 255 characters. If you put folders inside folders inside folders, you can have that problem. So that's it. I've been caught by that. Never funny, always strange. Talking of never funny, here am I.
And always strange. Over to Rob.
Stop it, you'll make me blush or something. Okay, X and A for Windows Phone. This is last but one session, so we're heading into the home straight, I guess you could say. This is where we have the fun. This is after dinner speaking with fun as well. I'm going to be looking at X and A for Windows Phone, with then the final session on the marketplace and how you sell and monetize, there's a nice word, your applications coming after that. So you're going to get X and A on Windows Phone, how the games work, how to create an X and A game, images and sprites, the touch panel and the motion sensors in an X and A game, how to manage sound, combining X and A and Silverlight, and a little bit at the end about the fast application switching in Mango and how it applies to X and A games. So it's a fairly packed program, loads of demos, and we might even get a bonus demo as well if we get time. So something there to look forward to, if not to live for. And so we'll just keep on chugging through here. Quick word about X and A. It's a game framework which was invented by Microsoft and pushed out across a whole range of platforms, originally on the PC and the Xbox 360, but now on Windows Phone as well. Important things to bear in mind. If you have a game that runs on the Windows PC or the Xbox 360, there's a very good chance it'll slide onto the phone, no trouble at all. You may have to resize some textures and manage your audio files and things, but it'll go across. In 3D, you can get some very impressive performance on the phone, because everything's done driving the hardware in the phone, which is 3D graphics aware, at full speed. There are some very interesting input options. We'll explore some of those in a minute or two. And you can use the hardware and sensors on the phone to make your games more interesting. And there is potential for Xbox Live integration as well, so you can think in terms of using avatars in your game and also putting achievements in your game as well. So it's all good stuff, and it's a nice place to work. It provides everything you need to get started writing games. If you have an idea and some textures and some bits and pieces, then you can start writing games straight away. Most of my ideas tend to involve cheese. And there is a cheese-flavored game, so everybody be pleased about that. You've got full content management, so I can create my resources, PNG files, WAV files for the audio, 3D models if I want to use those, and I can drag those into Visual Studio, and it will look after the content for me from then on. It appears in the phone, and the programs can pick it up, and that works across all the platforms, PC, Xbox 360, and phone. If you want to, having done this discussion on how we can cross-factor solutions and put multiple projects into the same solution, you could have a single solution containing the Xbox version, the PC version, and the phone version, and you could share a big chunk of the game object, and the game engine across all those. So it supports all these good things, and it's very well factored. I use it to teach people how to program, because the design of the objects is so good that it all works an absolute treat. So that's X and A. Games don't work like other programs. If you write Silverlight apps, you'll know that a lot of the time you're actually binding behaviors to events. User presses button, something happens behind that. Web request arrives, we unpack the object, put it on the screen, bind display elements to it, away you go. So stuff is fired off by events happening out there somewhere. In the case of a game, not what happens. In the case of a game, There are three things that happen in the game. First thing is we start up, we give them a loading screen and a progress bar whenever we bring in all the assets, the textures, the models, the scripts, and put them in memory. And once that's all there, the game then runs flat out, repeatedly updating the game world, moving the objects, making them bounce off each other or whatever the game's supposed to do, and rendering the game world. So that's taking the game engine, the game design, and putting it on the screen in a display that makes sense. That's how games work. And if you're used to Silverlight or Windows Forms, this is kind of new. And because you don't actually ever wait for things to tell you, you're all the time polling, you're all the time redrawing, and that's how games are. So, a bit of a paradigm shift, but the good news is that the XNA framework does all this for you. We've started with templates to make applications. We've been doing this for a very long time. The XNA template will make you a brand new and empty game. You then have to fill in the update, the draw, the initialize, and the load content methods, and that's the game behavior sorted. Initialize fires up when the game starts and does any once and for all setup. Load content goes off and gets your assets, and then update and draw are called for you by the game engine to actually update the display, update the game engine and draw the display on the screen. That's how it all fits together. All we have to do is do that. Today, not quite a world unveiling, but does it for me. Cheese Roller is the new game. Last year it was Cheese Lander, this year it's Cheese Roller. Next year, who knows?
So the person who asked when we were going to see Cheese Lander 2011, sorry.
It's Cheese Roller this time. This is inspired by the famous Dutch rolling cheese of Edam, which is one of my favorite jokes in the world, by the way. Andy, what cheese is made backwards?
What cheese is made backwards?
Yes. Play this at home. The man, Jeff, knows. It's Edam.
It's Edam.
Edam is made backwards.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That's wiped the smile off his face. And we're using a round sprite, a rolling sprite. To do this. So what I want to do is, great thing about writing, a good way to write games is to get some behaviours going and play with them and then see where that takes you. So I'm going to get a piece of cheese rolling around the screen and then we'll see how we can use this in various different kinds of gameplay model. So I've got to effectively build myself a game world. And when you make your game, this is the set of variables that keeps track of the stuff inside my game that I'll be playing with. And in this case, I'm going to manage the texture and the draw position of my piece of cheese, which will be round. So I've got two things, a 2D texture called cheese texture, and a rectangle, which is an XY position and a width and a height, to tell me where on the screen the cheese should be drawn. Once I've got those two things, I can then put the cheese on the screen anywhere I like. This is made backwards. There you go, that's the MAD. You can't see that, but then again, life is never perfect.
Sorry. I got it.
I made a texture called Edam, which is basically a thing I made in, I think I used paint.net. One little tip, by the way, yes, if you want a really cheap or even free, a really good image editing program written in .net called paint.net, if you just search for that, you can download it. It's as good as some much more expensive ones, and it supports layers and transparency. If you're preparing artwork for XNA games, you need to have transparency in your PNGs so that you can make your textures look right on the screen. Paint.net will do that. It's a free download. It's a great program, and that's what I use to make my round blob with a highlight on, which is my piece of cheese that will roll around the screen. Okay, I've got that. I then have my rectangle. I'm doing some mathematics based on the size of the screen that I've got, and we'll talk about screen dimensions in a minute because this is kind of important. You have to kind of get this. We want the game to look the same irrespective of the platform it's running on. Now, as I'll say in a few minutes, on the phone this is much less of an issue, but on the PC or on the Xbox they could put it on a big telly, a small monitor, they could use HDTV, and so the size of the viewport, the size of the screen will change. What I've got here is code that says, okay, I want the sprite, I want my piece of cheese to be a 1/12 of the width, and a 1/12 of the width again, so that it's square, okay? That's how we do it, that's how we now have our nice piece of cheese that's the right size. And the hardware, when it draws, it will scale this. So my drawing behavior is very simple. Begin the drawing process, draw the cheese texture where it's supposed to be, and shine white light on it. So my cheese will appear white in terms of the light, but the actual blob is red, so it comes out red. It's all jolly fine. And cornflower blue is a colour you'll see a lot of if you write X&A games, because for some reason that's the colour they picked. It's one away from blue screen of death, which would have been a bad colour to use, I guess. That would have been sent the wrong message. So it's cornflower blue. And so this little draw thing will clear the screen to blue and then put the cheese on there. And the whole name of the game in terms of how you write X&A is concerned is you effectively are drawing textures and putting them on the screen. I'm doing 2D stuff because there's some phone stuff I want to get into, but the process is just the same for 3D. And we'll just keep on chugging through this. Any questions of note?
Is there a reason you're using a rectangle instead of a vector?
Aha! That's a really good question, and the answer is yes. I want to keep it simple for now. Vectors will make an appearance in about 10 slides. So that's a great question, and we'll show how to use vectors and rectangles together a little bit later on. The answer is yes, because I want to use a rectangle to scale the cheese to the right place. If you use a vector, you can position, but you can't scale. Of which a little bit more later. That's a great question. Thank you for that.
We've had helpful information for those of you interested in getting paint.net, that the website where you can get it is www.getpaint.net.
Yes, and it's a very, very good program. If you haven't got that, the other one, of course, is GIMP, which is amazingly powerful but really hard to use. Paint.net is a nice and easy to use program. But without any more ado, let's go draw some cheese. Let's go do some cheese drawing. So I've got basically what I've just shown you in a program all ready to look at, and I've just pressed a button and the wrong thing has happened. Let's just get rid of that and then go content, desktop, Rob Miles. And I've got this really strange sharing thing. Okay. Desktop. Okay. Never seen that before.
I saw that this morning. Puts the fear off.
Yes, there's a certain amount of tenseness in certain parts of my anatomy at the moment. Let's get back to the drawing cheese demo. Let's get myself back onto home turf, and let's get some cheese drawing action, as it's called in the cheese drawing fraternity, which is not that big actually. There's my emulator. Here's the program. All this stuff was made for me by the template. I've got my two projects, the content project and the actual game project. Make it a bit bigger. There are my two textures in the game world. There is my initialize that sets the position of the texture on the screen. Here is my load content that fetches my made backwards, my content into the texture in the game. And here is my draw method, which draws some cheese on the screen. And so I can now press run. Points to bear in mind. The position of the cheese has been set to 0, 0, which is the origin of the coordinate space. And as we'll see, this is kind of interesting because you might think, a lesser mortal would think, hey up, it's drawn the cheese in the wrong place. But actually this isn't the case because X&A games wake up and run with the cheese in, with the phone in landscape mode. So 0, 0 in X&A coordinate space is the top left-hand corner. So in the case of a game, naught is top left. In the case of other coordinates, you might find naught in the bottom left. So there is an important difference here. So at the moment, the game is running in landscape mode, and the cheese is top left-hand corner, and that's drawing a piece of cheese on the screen. And all can look and be amazed. But I'll stop it before it gets too exciting, and we'll go back to the deck, assuming I can figure out how to do that. So we can draw things, and this is effectively how games work. What I want to do now, though, is find the deck, and then, having done that, move on to how we customize the game displays to fit the phone. Now, this is kind of important stuff, and it insists on making it really hard for me to... Yeah, you were having fun this morning, weren't you?
I was.
He's got this sly smile. He's going, now Rob's suffering
now
the pain. Absolutely. By default, unlike a Silverlight app that wakes up in portrait, an X&A game wakes up in landscape. You can change that, and in this case I want to, because I want the cheese. I want to hold the game in portrait mode, and so I can select the actual orientation of the game when it starts up by modifying some properties. The game can specify what orientations it can support, just like a Silverlight app can, and we can have a method which fires, an event which fires when the screen is tipped, just like Silverlight can. You can animate the transition if you want, and when you tip it, of course, the origin gets moved to whatever the top left-hand corner of the viewport is. If you use the accelerometer, which is how you will control a game by tipping the phone, rather irritatingly, the frame of reference for that is always as if the phone is held in portrait, like a tombstone standing up in, laid that way in front of you. So in the situation where you're getting readings from the accelerometer, they'll always be in that frame of reference, even if you have a game running in landscape. This is a bit confusing. It just means swapping two values. It isn't too painful to do. It's quite easy to sort out, so no worries there. But this is important and really useful and a great way to make your XNA games go faster with no effort from you. An XNA game can also say how big it wants to be on the screen. And the game will be given this resolution irrespective of the particular hardware res of the device you're holding. The GPU, the hardware inside the phone that's making the display, will do all the hard work for you in terms of rendering this and get rid of any nasty edges. So what you can do, and it's a good trick this, is if you've got a game that's going a bit slow, chugging a bit, then just change the resolution to a lower res screen. Go from 800 by 480 to 400 by half of 480, which I think is 240, isn't it? You've got a quarter of the resolution, a quarter of the screen real estate being used, but the user won't spot much. If the game moves fast, then they won't see that it's a bit more blurry now. It's not noticeable. So a really good way, I've taken games that are unplayable at high resolution, just change the size of the viewport, and suddenly they go at a really nice speed. So keep that one in mind, and the next thing I'll do, I guess, is show you how to do this. So a couple of lines of code you can put into your initialize method. This one says, I'd like portrait, please, and nothing else. And this one says, I'm going to be using 480 by 800, which is the default phone resolution. Now, we had some questions yesterday about how do I handle the fact that new phones might come out with new display sizes, and what's the way of fixing that. In an XNA game, it's in front of you. If a new phone comes out with a really high-res screen, fine. If you put these two lines in your program, your game will always get 480 by 800. And so you're guaranteed to get that resolution. You can pre-scale all your sprites. You can do all that good stuff. And the game will just work correctly. Another good trick to play is to ask XNA to give you full screen mode. Now, we've had this with the little bar on the top that has your signal strength and your battery. It's interesting in that you don't... Well, let me see. I'll just show you what's going on here. If I go back to my desktop and I get up the emulator... And I go into the programs and I fire up Cheese Roller. Then, okay, that looks quite respectable. If I do this though, and you can do this on the phone, and it's a good trick to play. If I press the wrong, it's very hard to use the thing sideways. If I go into settings, and it's figured out that I'm on side, I change the theme from dark to light, which is you have a white on a black background, and I go back to my game and run that again. Then we'll see that it actually looks horrible now. If I hit this, because there's this nasty, thick, white boundary down the side. Now, that is because the hardware scaler is fitting my game into the middle of the dark area you can see, and there's a big, fat, white band down the right-hand side that actually makes the whole thing look very ugly. That's the space for battery notifications and that kind of stuff, and that, it really stands out a mile. So before you ship your game, before you do anything with it, just flip the background color and see what happens, see if it does that. In the next version, I'll leave it set to white because it'll stay in the image that way. The next time I run the game doing it with my modified version of the code, we'll find that actually it goes back to taking the whole screen over, and that's what we want. So if I do that, will it take me back to Mango XNA? No, it won't. Oh, it does. Well, hey, so make it full screen and you won't get that problem, is the message of the day, and a good message, no doubt. So yeah, we can effectively play with this, and I've got another. I'm just going to go back now. Oh, this is good.
So you need to get back to.
Back to Rob Miles again. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I now fire up my next demonstration, I can show you that it's actually very easy to change these things, and it makes the program look a lot nicer on the devicer. And again, you can steal all this code. It's all coming in up in front of you, and I've got some lines here which you can comment out, And away we go. Here you go. So I can say, portrait only, please, set the size, and ask for full screen. So if I just take these things and decommentize them, then we can actually see how the program looks, how it should do. And I'll just deploy this to the emulator. And up it will come with my white background. So now we've filled the screen completely. It's gone for the other portrait, which is... No, it's landscape. I apologize. It's gone top left-hand corner. So it's now actually done that. And so now I've actually got a fixed orientation, and I'm using the whole of the screen. And by default, I would strongly advise you just to do that when you make these games, because the white bit at the top, very ugly, very irritating, not keen on that at all. So that's all rather fine and dandy, and I'm kind of happy with that. And I've almost found a way to get back to where I'm supposed to be without a big fight as well, which is good. Come on, Speedy, you can do it. So we know now that there's a phone consideration to do with orientation and scale that we have to deal with, and that's how we deal with it. Adding movement. It's all very well having a piece of cheese on the screen, but who wants that? Now, this is where we go into think about the vectors we were talking about before, because rectangles on the screen can be positioned, but only on pixel boundaries. So if I want to move at less than 1 pixel per frame, it's not going to work. It's going to be a bit of a mess. So I'm going to use a vector, which is called cheese speed, which gives the speed of the cheese, and a vector, which is cheese position, that gives its position. Okay? And I've also got a thing called friction. We're going to be flicking the cheese around the screen with gestures. And so I want the cheese to slow down and stop. And so making the friction 0.99 means I can effectively multiply the speed by the friction value, so my cheese will slow down. So we're flicking cheese around the screen because that's what our users want.
Indeed.
Okay. And there's a
big demand.
Big demand, yes. Selling like hotcakes made of cheese. So here's how the position... This is basically my physics engine, if you like. Two lines of C-sharp. The first one adds the current speed to the position, so we move the cheese across the screen. And the second one multiplies the speed by friction, so it slows down over time. Now, the nice thing about this, and it's a lovely piece of C-sharp here, these things are vectors, but because all the operators are overloaded, I can add two vectors together and just make the resultant, which then gets assigned there. So we're doing arithmetic with vectors, and we can also do multiplication by scalars, so I can take my cheese speed vector, multiply it by the friction, and slow it down. So this makes the maths really, really easy to understand and nice and simple. There are methods you can use to do this, but I like using the operators because it looks kind of sweet. So that's going to give us our physics model, and this will do a bit of cheese bouncing. I want the cheese to hit the side of the screen and bounce off it. So if I go off the left edge, I reverse the left velocity, and if I go off the right edge, I reverse the right velocity, the horizontal velocity. And I'm basically saying if you're going off the right-hand side, we should be going negative in that way, and if we're going off the left-hand side, we should be going positive. So this is, again, a bit of code to do a perfect bounce. Now, we're heading here towards a kind of snooker game type approach, or a kind of shove halfpenny or rolling pennies, or whatever you like, machinery. Once we've got that, last thing we have to do is figure out how we're going to put things on the screen in the right place. And this is my rectangle called cheese draw position. I take my vector, I effectively round it up to the nearest integer, and I set it. So this is the mapping of where the cheese should be to the place we're going to draw it. The nice thing is that my rectangle means my size will always be correct, but my vector means I can move it really slowly over many frames, and it will all come out in the wash. Okay? So we're doing a bit of conversion there. So here's how it works. We now have a cheese that can roll on the screen. It will bounce off edges when it hits them. We've got some physics in there. But the thing is, at the moment, our cheese will just sit and grin at us. They've actually seen grinning cheese, but I'm sure it's out there somewhere. If someone invents that, by the way, and becomes rich selling grinning cheese, then let me know. Cut me in. But we have a piece of cheese that just sits on the screen and does nothing. But we don't have any controllers or thumbsticks or fire buttons on the phone. But what we do have is a touch panel with gesture support. So we're going to use a flick gesture to flick the cheese around the screen and make it bounce off the sides. And this is kind of fun. So we're going to have a look at gesture support now.
Can we just interject with a couple of questions?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because a couple of things that kind of relate to this sort of resolution and scaling issue. So Dual Op-Amp 29 has a bunch of Xbox games.
Fantastic name.
Great, eh? Yes. You can tell with a different community now, you get into X and O. that he would like, he or she, would like to port to Windows Phone. But,
yep.
But the textures for these games are based on 1280 by 720. Do you have to completely remake these textures, or can it, the phone automatically scale these?
You could set up a transform to do the transformation for you, but the problem is I think you should really remake them, not for much for the XNA, but for the application size. If they're that big, then they're going to take up more memory in the phone and make your application bigger. One thing I advise folk to do is to pick a resolution, scale your textures to fit, and it will downsize them. That will work a treat. But you'll have a game that's very large and takes a long time to load. When the game starts up, we have to fetch all the textures from the back storage into the game. And if they're big, that'll be slow. And so the answer is yes, the hardware scaler will help you, but I'd advise you to resize them anyway, because it'll make the game smaller, make it load quicker, and make it run faster.
Cool. Okay. And just a couple of things related to the resolution. Can you change the resolution of an app at runtime? And is it possible to get the resolution of the device screen on the fly, so we don't have to hardwire the resolution in our app?
The answer is you set the resolution effectively in the initialize method, so you set it once and for all. There's no bonus in changing it on the fly at runtime once you've set it. What I do is I basically pick the size I want this game to work at, and then I make everything fit. I tell the hardware scaler that's the size I want it to be, and it will always work on every phone. So you just nail it. You go 320 by 240 is fairly poor resolution compared with the phone screen. But for games, it's great because it goes like a rocket. The performance is awesome.
Yeah.
And if it's going real fast and the user's enjoying the game, who cares about resolution? So pick one that works and then nail it.
Cool.
Absolutely. Much easier than writing for any of the other platforms.
Okay.
Any more?
No, well, gesture support. Well,
let's give you a gesture. Yes, okay. You might just say that. So if you want to, you can read individual touch events, and the phone can track 4 individual events, and these are always named so you can detect touch going down, touch moving, and touch released for any given event. So if you want to, if you want to have a really weirdy, beardy type piano or whizzly game, you can track individual fingers and move them around. And that's possible. It's quite a bit of a pain to do. If all you want is flicking, then it's best to use gesture recognition. And so we just effectively say, I want to know about flicks, please, and the system will tell us when they occur. And so it's as simple as that. So we say, tell me about flicks or whatever, and then we get told about it. And there are a whole bunch of different gestures. What's a gesture? Gosh. C and D are very close on the keyboard. That'll be it. Supported. What's G? Oh, G's a long way. I'm out of it here. The touch panel can detect a number of different ones. Tap, double tap, hold, 3 different kinds of drag, pinch and flick. And so the idea is if you say, I want to know about taps, you'll get told when a tap gesture is performed. If you want to know about flicks or pinches or drags, you'll get those as well. So you just register for the ones you want, and we're going to use flick. And the way you say, I want to be flicking my cheese, is to effectively set the touch panel gestures, gesture type dot flick. If you want to add more, you just say, or gesture type dot drag or whatever. These will then get fired. I do this once when initialize method runs, and I can ask the touch panel capability information if I want as well, but the default, folks, is 4 points. I was thinking, why couldn't it be more than that? And I thought, yeah, but you hold the phone in one hand, so you can't really be more than 5, can it? Because you wouldn't. Anyway, moving on. So we can actually find out what our abilities are and use that. And this is the beauty of it. This is beautiful code that you should pay homage to. This is the code in the update method that retrieves my gestures and makes the cheese move. If I have a gesture available, I read it. If it's a flick, which it will be because I've asked for flick gestures to be sent to me, I take the delta value, which is the vector which gives the flick direction, I divide it by 100, and I set the cheese speed to it. And that's it. I'm now flicking cheese. That's the shortest piece of code I've ever seen that flicks cheese. And I guess that's true for you as well. How could it be different? So let's show you this, because all I've done is taken the code that you've already seen and effectively put an update method in there. So I'll just get rid of that one. And I'll go into here, and we'll go and take a look at cheese flick. You get all this code, and do with it what you will. You could put a game in Marketplace tomorrow which involves flicking cheese. I won't thank you for doing that, but take a look at the code, and it's all in here. So if I make that nice and big so you can see it, as my constructor. One thing I should say, if you're an XNA person on PC and Xbox, you'll be used to the update and draw methods being called 60 times a second by the framework. In the phone, we call them 30 times a second. That's because on an LCD panel that's that size, the performance, you don't notice that the missing 30 frames. And besides, LCDs can't, on phones, can't usually update more than about 30 hertz. Now, the actual speed is set here. You could make it 60, but that would just annoy your punters because the battery would go flat and the game wouldn't look any better. So if you are converting games, do bear in mind that as far as you're concerned from a PC or an Xbox 360 standpoint, these run at half speed. Now, when you look at the methods of the call to do the draw and the update, you'll find they are given a time span value that tells you how long since they were last called, so you can make it all run correctly. There's my initialize, there's my gestures, there's my cheese being made backwards, and here is my update. That's my physics model. This is my gesture support. This is my put the rectangle on the screen. And this is my bounce. And I'm good. So if we run this, and it's going to be very exciting, isn't it?
It's going to be very exciting.
Too much excitement is bad for the heart muscles, so I'm told. And I've just made the phone the wrong way. And guess what? Okay, anyone tell me what I've forgotten to do? I haven't asked for full screen, have I?
Ah! No.
So never mind, that's minus brandy points. But watch this. If I do that, nothing happens. Do that, and I'm flicking my cheese, and I can just... It's hard to show what the mouse is doing, but if I just flick it in one direction, and it gets hold of the cheese, and the cheese just bounces around the screen. If you're watching it on live meeting, it's a bit jerky. But if you watch it on the real thing like I'm doing, it's actually nice and smooth. But it looks like we now have a thing we can flick around the screen using the touch panel. And it is as simple as that. So now we have the basis of any kind of rolling game, any kind of snooker game, any kind of game like that. So all good stuff. And very, very simple to write and incorporate into your games. So there you are. I didn't expect a round of applause, but since I couldn't have heard it anyway, it doesn't make much difference. So let's see if I can get back to my slides without a hitch. So we can now flick cheese. And so if you want to build gesture support into your games, very easy to do. The touch panel, if you go and look on robmiles.com, I've got some demo files, and I have a multi-touch piano program, which uses the multiple touch positions to actually play you chords and things, which is quite fun. So if you want to figure out how to do that, then go and look there. If you want to improve on Cheese Roller, what I'm really making is a physics-based game. And if I want to add more bits of cheese to bounce off, and maybe, I don't know, other things to you could try and hit the cheese into the wafer, or knock the butter off a shelf, or that kind of thing, then why not? But physics engines are hard to write and hard to get going. Take a look at the Farseer engine on Coplex. There's a version for Windows Phone, and just to make this a bit simpler and short-circuit things a bit, I'll show you my bonus demo.
Absolutely.
A bonus demo, it will, okay. You get your wish. So any wish you are going to get, I think, in the foreseeable. But I'll get rid of this. This is a game which we wrote for a competition we had at Hull, where we had to invent different kinds of destruction golf. And I'll put this up amongst the demos. It's got the Farseer engine baked in. So this does all the physics stuff. And this is effectively a very, very simple piece of C-sharp XNA games running on the phone that builds on what you've seen but uses the physics engine in the Farseer libraries to do the physics of the objects in there. And there aren't many objects in there, but what there are wonderful. Okay, so here we go. What I have in here is destruction golf. I have a little house on a shelf and a golf ball. And I'm using the same flick gesture to fire the golf ball, bang, and it hits the shelf and knocks the house off. And the idea of the game is you have to actually get from one level to the next by destroying things. And if I'm not careful, that ball is going to roll off the end of the shelf. There it goes and fall onto the floor. Then the game will reset and I can play it again. And this has several useful things. It shows you also how I can actually have the screen pan. So I've got a long, wide bitmap, which is my terrain. And I'm using a transformation matrix to slide the screen along. So if I do something very daft, like fire the ball right off into the air like that, eventually I fall off my texture and it disappears off into the distance. So if you want to write games involving physics that might involve birds that could conceivably be angry, then then this is a really good starting point, because you've got the physics, you've got the objects. In terms of how the game actually works, some of the objects can move around, like the ball and the house, and some of the objects are fixed. There goes the ball off the end, like the shelf. And so if you want to actually make a little physics-based game, and one of our students has actually got a game called Destruction Golf built using this engine in the marketplace, and he's had about 70,000 downloads. If only he was charging for it, he'd be a very, very rich man. He had an amazing amount of action with this, and it's all quite fun to play.
You don't happen to know where people can download this Farseer engine?
There's a link on the slide coming up.
Oh, okay.
So if we go back to the content, there's actually a link on there. I think it's on Coplex. It's a bit of a pain to convert to work on the phone. But if you just take my project, take the project I've just shown you, then that actually will work for you. So it's farseerphysics.coplex.com. And it's a great starting point for any kind of 2D physics. And he's made a third version, version 3 of the engine, which is even better. I actually met the guy who wrote this, and it was like, oh, you wrote Farseer, yay! And he went, get away from me, you strange person. And the conversation went downhill from there, but I digress. What I want to do now is look at how to use the motion sensor and accelerometer.
Can we just cover a couple of little quick questions?
Lovely,
because you were talking about gestures, and we've got two here, so we can tackle these at the same time. Is it possible to get more than one gesture at the same time? And is it possible to catch a flick action duration to implement a force calculation based on flick time?
That's a really good question. The first question, you saw I went around a loop looking for gestures. If I register for multiple kinds, I'll get all the gestures which the system has picked up in the order they were detected. I just check the type and then I behave accordingly. So if I had several different gestures, I'd have a switch statement in there, look at the gesture type, and then go after the code to do that. So for the first question, absolutely you can check for multiple gestures at the same time. Works a treat, no problem. Just extend my code. Second question, the vector length gives you the actual magnitude of the gesture, if you like. So if I do a slow one, well, that's not quite true. I tried to get my... I know exactly what this person's trying to do, and I also know it's rather hard to do. There are two issues with the flick gesture. One is getting the actual delta time is a bit tricky, and the other is you can't flick individual objects. The flick is across the entire screen, not a certain thing. So what you have to do, if you have three things on the screen and you want to flick one of them, which is what you might want to do, then you can't just use the flick gesture for that. You have to detect when the thing goes down so you can figure out which object was flicked first. And if you do that, then you can record the time at which that down event occurred and get the gesture time to figure out how long the flick ran for. But okay. It's something which, it's nice. Flicking individual objects actually turns out not to be a good plan, because it's very hard to get the finger positioned accurately enough to make it work. So it bears playing with. The good news as far as the questioner is concerned is you can get good gameplay out of this. It does actually work. The amusing thing, of course, is that I wrote an entire gesture recognition little bit of code to do all the hard work. And then I actually read the help documentation, always a good thing to do, and found it was built in. So that was an evening of fun that I needn't have had.
Yeah.
Story of my life. So there you go.
So yeah, so the answer's no. I was hoping for a simple yes. There you go.
Never ask me a question. Do you want another meat pie? Yes.
But
anything more
maybe.
Than that. Yes, but maybe. The answer is, I don't want to say it's easy or it's or no. Whatever, because, but it does bear playing with, and you can get the effect you want, although you may have to work a bit harder to get it exactly right. And this is the point at which having a real phone is nice. The emulator will give you something to go on, but being able to flick a real phone screen is something which you can't really replicate any other way. So let's look at the accelerometer. Now, this is worthy of some mention because every phone has one of these. Okay, if you use the motion sensor and the system is missing some other fundamentals, you won't work on all devices. So every phone from 7 to 7.5 will have an accelerometer. So you can do that. We can get the values in X, Y, and Z of acceleration. And we can use just the X and Y values to make a replacement gamepad. In fact, they even go from -1 to +1. So you can tip the thing to get effective a thumbstick. And that actually works surprisingly well. So we can do that. You have to fetch the sensors library. I think Andy mentioned this earlier when we were using it before. Once you've done that, you bring in the library, and then you bring in the namespace, and you can now use the sensor. Now, interestingly, this is the same library, the same code as you would use for Silverlight. So this is effectively XNA and Silverlight share the sensor behavior between them. And so you bring that in, and then away you go. And the accelerometer is a bit of a pain because you don't pole it. If you're a seasoned XNA game writer, then you'll be used to actually going off and looking for information from the devices that you're reading. This thing produces events that you have to bind to and then use through some kind of a proxy object which holds the readings that you want to actually pass in. So I make myself an accelerometer, I bind to the reading changed event, and then I fire the thing off and it starts running. And in my reading event, which you can see on the screen now, I effectively get the X, Y, and Z values from the accelerometer, put them into a vector, and use it in the update loop a little bit later. I'm doing some simple locking here because I've got a foreground task and a background task, and I don't want them fighting over the reading, so that's what the lock statements are for. And once I've done that, I'm in business. I'm good to go. So in my update, I can now I've now got a tipping game where I'm rolling my cheese by tipping the phone, not by flicking. And that's the only change I've made. Everything else is just the same. So we've now got a game a bit like a landing game that might involve cheese, which could have a name like
Cheese Lander?
Could be.
Yeah.
This is how Cheese Lander could be made to work if you were of a mind to do that. Okay. And so I can now show you some tipping cheese.
And just since you're talking about the accelerometer, since we've got a question about, can you also use the gyro?
There is the gyroscope is exposed as well as the gyroscope object. You can test whether these things are present or not. And it's always as well to do that before you use them. But yes, you can use the gyro. That gives you a rate of turn, which you might want to use in your application. But I don't know of any phones at the moment that have got the gyro support enabled, because I don't think even the ones that Microsoft use for their development, the ones I've seen, have got gyro in there. So this is why I'm still an accelerometer kind of a guy, because I know that'll be there.
Okay.
The answer is yes, of course you can. In fact, we'll look at the motion object in a few moments that fuses the gyro, accelerometer and compass into one lump of behavior you can use to control your games. So here is my tipping cheese game, and I'll just put it wrong way around. Okay, so now if I get this emulator, I can now start tipping the phone around and controlling where the ball goes, which is quite interesting. So I can now start using this to control, if I tip it this way, that it goes. I think I may have to get my X and my Y values, but now I'm actually controlling where the ball is by tipping the phone. This is a nice illustration of both how you do it in XNA, but also how you use the emulator to actually make the thing behave in the way that you want. So very easy to use, and it works very nicely. So we've seen that work, and everybody in this room, at least, is extremely happy. Well, Andy's smiling near enough. So there you go. If you do want to start using the more powerful sensors and get some sensor fusion going on, as it were, you can use the motion object. Now, you use this in the same way. It produces events. It has a little bit more behavior behind it, and they can actually do things like determine how rapidly the updates occur. They're normally of around 20 milliseconds or so resolution in terms. That's about the fastest you can run these things. So don't think, ooh, if I make it go faster, I'll get more data. You won't, you just get more copies of the same data coming through, which is less useful. But it's a Mango-only feature, and it's not guaranteed to be there. It provides attitude, which is orientation, pitch, yaw and roll, rotation rate, and a vector giving you where G is. And it uses whatever sensors are available. And it makes it easier to sort of bring together all those things and let you make games based on them. It also, at the moment, isn't available in the emulator, which is kind of unfortunate. So you can't actually use it with the tipping part. There's no support in there. But in the fullness of time, I'm sure it'll become available. So sound effects. Yep, sound effects are always good. We bring them in as resources. In this case, we have a pop.wav, which I made using a little sound thing. If you are a sound effect kind of person, take a look at a program called Audacity, which I happen to know that Andy uses a lot for practicing riffs in his rock band.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a very, very good sound recording program which will do pitch shifting, echo, noise cancellation, resizing up and down, and all kinds of good stuff.
You know how it is when you want to play along to a tune and your guitar is just like a semitone out from the recording? Audacity is the answer. Just shift the pitch of the music, not the pitch of your guitar.
Clever stuff. It's a free download, and if you just do a search for Audacity Audio on your favourite search engine, you'll find the link and download that. And it's very, very good for preparing sound samples for use here. It's a WAV file. We can't have MP3s as sound samples, although, actually, maybe you can now. I may be wrong on that one. But WAV works better. WAV sounds better. And these things are loaded into Content Manager. I put them into my game. So I'm now loading two things, a texture and a pop sound. And the idea is that when the cheese hits the wall, it makes a popping noise, and then we can sort of do what we like with the game, make it even more interesting like that. Playing a sound is very easy. You call the play method, and the sound just plays. It's instantaneous. It will come out like that, because the sound sample is loaded in memory and will be played straight away. You can play background music from your media collection behind the game if you want to do that. That will take a while to start up, because it has to fetch the music, decompress it, and start playing it. These things, they play within milliseconds. There are, I think it's 64 voices on a Windows phone, so you can play sound effects simultaneously, quite happily. You can use this in your game to play. If you want to actually play multiple sound effects, that's fine. If you want control of your sound effect as it's playing, then you can make a thing called a sound effect instance, and that lets you do things like shift the pitch during playback, position it left or right in the sound stage, and so you can have things that move left and right as the ball bounces left and right, should you wish to do that. There's a sound effects demo, which actually, because of the way that the sound is going through live meeting, wouldn't be that impressive, because you'd just have me saying, oh, I can hear a pop, and you have to take my word for it, and you might as well do that anyway. So I think we'll skirt gently past that one and carry on. As it says here, we can play music, you fetch the media player object, and that will then start playing things. In an XNA game, you can also get hold of the media content, including things like album covers and track information, so you could make customized music players in XNA, which is quite nice. And you can even make games that use the artwork from people's media collection in the gameplay, which is quite fun. No one's ever done that that I've seen. It's quite a nice idea, flying through your album covers or whatever. Quite an interesting idea. I have a little program you can find on robmiles.com that makes an animation of these things flying around the screen. Which, in fact, you can download that and buy it. There's actually one of my programs on the marketplace shows you sliding pictures, which is kind of nice. You've also got full 3D support, and you can use pre-built shaders that come with the phone. You can't write your own shaders in 3D, I'm afraid, but the hardware acceleration does provide a very, very good 3D acceleration. And this would be a really good point to stop, have a cup of your favourite beverage, and then come back in about... That's made Frank take his earplugs out. That's good. So if you want to, we'll do the XNA and Silverlight story, because I've been going now for about 50 minutes, and now's a good time for a break. So we'll have a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and we'll do XNA and Silverlight, which is a nice meaty topic, if that's okay with everybody, and then we'll go into the next thing. Okay.